1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome back. As promised, Josh Planos, contributor for 538.com and the Washington Post, among others, joins us for his weekly visit. Josh, we're finally into the first week of college football. We're going to talk about the games in a moment, but Ohio State's made its decision. They brought the hammer down on Urban Meyer. It was a little bitty plastic hammer, but nevertheless, they brought it down on him. A three-game suspension is what he gets. Give me your thoughts on how that looks for Ohio State.
I think it reflects pretty poorly on the university at large, college football in general, and, you know, modern day sports. I mean, I just don't think that we're having this conversation if, he doesn't have this obscenely successful track record. You know, if this is a 500 coach, I think there's no doubt that he's fired. And yet, because Urban Meyer is who he is, you know, one of the probably the you know, in the top three of most successful active coaches right now in the game, he's given a lot longer of a leash, despite, you know, him clearly blatantly lying to the press, to the university about what he knew, going through the steps to clear his phone in the wake of Zach Smith's allegations being brought to light, so as to, you know, cleanse himself of, you know, any responsibility for what he did or didn't know. And it's just, you know, it's a shame. It really is that, an issue like this can be swept under the rug so easily. And, we're just going to move on. And that's, that's the sad reality is if this is an average coach as opposed to an elite coach, I don't think we have this conversation.
I completely agree. The team itself really had nothing to do with this, so they have to go out and I guess get through this one way or the other. They're way down the list on things that are most important in this situation. But nevertheless, we're to the football season. They'll have an interim coach for 3 weeks while this goes on, filling in for Urban Meyer. And they do get Oregon State at home. Will this be an easy win for Ohio State?
Yeah, in terms of, you know, on the field talent, I think there's a pretty clear disparity between the two programs. I'm not trying to make light of, you know, what issues these players are facing as well, because like you said, Neil, the players didn't have anything to do with this. It's unfortunate that this cloud is going to follow them for the next 3 weeks and really, you know, the next season at least.
Sure.
It's something that they really couldn't have avoided if they wanted to. But, you know, at least they have, you know, two pretty manageable games to start the season. The game against TCU in week three, I think, will be, you know, pretty difficult. But, the first two games, they should walk right over their opponents and maybe, you know, feel a little bit better about, the season moving forward, because right now I can't even imagine what kind of, you know, shadow you carry when you're a part of this team and, you know, when you're embroiled in a controversy that really you had nothing to deal with.
Well, another Big Ten school has a little tougher challenge, as it's Michigan playing at Notre Dame, which is a pretty intriguing week one matchup.
Absolutely. We've got a classic rivalry back. Shea Patterson is going to be the man, you know, under center. And, you know, I think he's probably the most talented quarterback they've had in the Harbaugh era, at least. And that's really, what's held them back pretty significantly since, Jim Harbaugh got there. It's really separated them from, becoming an elite team. I dug into the numbers, and since, you know, Harbaugh arrived, in terms of total quarterback rating, no team has won more despite worse quarterback play than Michigan. I believe they've won 28 games since Harbaugh got there, and yet they're, you know, squarely average to below average in terms of overall quarterback play. So, you know, I think a lot is going to be put on Shea Patterson as far as, you know, how far he can, bring this team, just as any quarterback is under scrutiny. But I've actually feel like this might be the quarterback who has the skill set necessary for this team to take that next leap.
Top-ranked Alabama will be playing a neutral site game in Orlando against Louisville. This was a game that would have been more intriguing last year or the year before. Now without Lamar Jackson, Louisville isn't in the top 25. Doesn't it seem to be quite as formidable of a foe as they would have been the past two seasons? How do you see this game?
Yeah, you know, Alabama does a really good job of scheduling. I read somewhere they haven't played a true road non-conference game in years. You know, because they're always playing these road games that are really at just kind of, you know, supposedly neutral sites. What a terrific way to bolster the resume, because at this point we have no idea what to expect from Louisville, because they won't have, Lamar Jackson, who is, you know, really the lightning rod of the offense for the past few years. I would expect Alabama to roll, because they're always rolling. Early on in the season, this defense is as good as any in the country, seemingly every year. I would give Clemson a slight edge in terms of overall talent, but Alabama's, you know, probably right there at number two. And, you know, who knows who they're going to start at quarterback, because Saban won't tell, any of the press. So we don't know if we're going to get, Tua or Jalen on Saturday. But, you know, it should be a really great opportunity for Alabama to showcase this team and what we can expect moving forward.
Another neutral site game in Dallas finds Miami. Miami in the top 10. They come in at ranked number 8. They're taking on an LSU team that many believe their head coach might be kind of teetering, really needs a good season to keep things going. Miami and LSU, this is another very good week one game, Josh.
Yeah, and it's not usually like LSU to really get off to a super solid start, at least in recent years. Ed Orgeron, I think, has a lot on his plate, but it feels surreal, honestly, thinking of Miami as, you know, kind of a favorite.
Sure.
Or one of the top 10 teams going into a season.
Yeah.
Yet that was, you know, absolutely the case year in and year out, throughout the 90s and early 2000s. But it's just been such a departure. And then, you know, last season to see them kind of skyrocket. It's exciting again, and I think Miami's got a lot to be excited for this season. Just a terrific game to start the season. I'm definitely going to make sure I'm in front of a television for that one.
Former Murray State quarterback Justin Fuente will take Virginia Tech to Florida State. I've done a game there. That is a tough place to come away with a win. But Virginia Tech also pretty good in many respects. And they'll try to come away from Tallahassee with a victory. That is another solid week one match.
Yeah, you know, this slate looks really good this season. I mentioned, before we started taping that it wasn't the same as last season when we had Alabama and Florida State as kind of the marquee matchup, but this actually might be a better slate in total. There's a lot to be excited about. A lot of teams that are kind of, you know, right on the cusp of making a surge into the top 15 who, you know, need to start strong. Obviously, week one losses carry less weight than, you know, ones later in the season, but all these teams want to start out 1-0, and that's, you know, a great matchup of two, you know, historically successful programs. And anytime you get something like that, regardless of what the expectation is for the season, it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to pack a stadium. So, Florida State, Virginia Tech, teams like that are always going to pull a crowd, and we'll see what Fuente can do against a really solid defense.
Last year, I remember talking in the preseason about Washington. They were highly ranked, coming kind of out of nowhere, ranked higher maybe than I thought they should be at the preseason. It turned out they were really good, and they really take a week one challenge when you have to go to Auburn and come away with a victory. That is really a big game, as they have beefed up their schedule. This would be a big win if they could get it at Auburn.
Yeah, and I was part of the crowd that was really, banging the Washington drum, and especially the Jake Browning drum. And yet, he really kind of regressed. He was a solid quarterback, to be sure, but he had some turnover problems that he did not have in previous seasons. And obviously, he's going to be the key to running, Peterson's offense and being able to pull away with a win there, because that's, as you mentioned, Neil, that's a really tough environment. The South gets up for football like no other region of the country, and the SEC is definitely going to want to be able to say that they have the top conference pretty much each and every week of each and every season. So I'm sure Auburn wants to get off on the right foot, especially given, you know, how unfortunate their season ended. You know, they basically let, you know, UCF walk right all over them. So they're going to be pissed and they're going to be ready to go. And, you know, it'll be a clash of, you know, two of the best teams in their respective conferences.
And there in Nebraska, you have a brand new head coach. I know they have to be ready for their game against the Zips this week of Akron.
Yeah, they'll be starting a true freshman for the first time in school history. So there's you know, a lot on the table as far as, you know, newness. Obviously, we don't know what to expect out of Scott Frost and his offense, other than, you know, the tempo that they keep preaching and what we saw on tape from UCF a season ago. But yeah, Nebraska is definitely ready to get their season started. There is a certain energy in the state that we haven't felt in a while, and it's, you know, I feel like a lot of people say that, but I mean, it really is evident. You see red everywhere, and I can't even imagine how, you know, Adrian Martinez, the 18-year-old, is going to react when, wow, he runs out and there are 90,000 people filling up a stadium for, you know, what's really, you know, not all that great of a matchup to start the season. But it's going to be exciting, and, you know, we'll see if the Cornhuskers can, you know, turn a page, because they really need to, given, you know, what happened over the last five seasons.
This week it's college football. The next week will be into the NFL season, so it's the final week of the preseason. Are there any looming questions that need to be answered for any particular team this week with this final week of preseason games, Josh?
Sure. I mean, I think quarterback play is easy to point to. And, you know, Philadelphia, you know, Carson Wentz hasn't even been cleared to compete for contact, let alone, you know, cleared to play in games. That's a really big jump to make if you're going to clear him and then immediately start him in week one, especially given that you have the Super Bowl MVP, you know, riding the bench,
yes,
ready to, you know, step in as a backup. So, you know, with Nick Foles and how poorly he's played this preseason, I just hope that doesn't come, you know, I hope that doesn't force a situation in which they're going to, you know, try and start Carson Wentz early if he's not 100% healthy, because that's, you know, a really big mistake if so. And in Buffalo, you know, we don't know if Josh Allen is going to be the starter. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, questions still, you know, looming in terms of, you know, who's going to be the, you know, projected starting quarterback of these successful teams. And, you know, not a whole lot of time to figure it out.
Big money for Odell Beckham Jr. as yesterday they released at least a little bit about his five-year extension worth $95 million. Will they get their money's worth from Odell Beckham Jr.?
I think so. I think a lot of people are pointing that, you know, how can somebody who might not be a top two wide receiver currently be paid like the number one guy? But Odell has done some incredible things since he got into the league. You know, there are certain statistics that he rates extremely highly in, you know, whether it be, you know, receiving yards over the first four seasons or receiving touchdowns. He's definitely, I would say, probably the most electric player in the NFL right now. And, you know, some of that has to do with he seems to have the best dance moves, but, you know, a lot of it,
sure,
has to do with his speed and his athleticism and, you know, kind of the catches that he can make that nobody else can. So I think that they're going to get their money's worth. He's certainly probably going to be a lot more cheery at practice now that he's being, you know, compensated well. I would expect Odell to do nothing but succeed this season and moving forward, because I've got no reason to doubt him.
And the big NBA news coming yesterday when Manu Ginobili announced his retirement. He really had a terrific career with four championships in 16 seasons, but he felt it was time to go, even though he still had 1 year left on his current contract.
Yeah, you know, there are certain players who we feel like as fans and as journalists, we know better than we do. And I feel like Manu was kind of, you know, one of those guys in that, you know, if I were organizing a pickup game, I would want him to be on my team.
Mm-hmm.
I have no reason to you know, believe that he would be a poor teammate in any respect. And he just seems like a guy who would really put the interest of the team, the interest of the others, you know, before himself. And, you know, whether that be, you know, he came over and was a star, and he's probably the best, you know, South American basketball player ever, and immediately was okay with, you know, going to the bench. Not a lot of players would check their ego like that, but he knew that that's what San Antonio needed, and was, you know, willing to do that for the betterment of the team. And it's just a classic case of, you know, finding somebody in the game who you aspire to uphold the values of the sport. And he is just that guy. I mean, he really was a man who was universally praised. You know, he had the Euro step. He, you know, really, you know, greatly introduced that to the game. But more so, he just was a good personality and a good person by all examples set over his career. So the game's going to miss him quite a bit. I know I'm going to miss watching him. And, you know, hopefully he's doing, you know, what's right for him and his family.
Before I let you go, one other NBA note, and that is good news. I have a couple of friends who are Boston Celtics fans. They are beaming with the news that Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving back at full strength. They feel really good if they have a full, healthy roster going into next season.
As they should. You know, I think that's the team to beat in the East. We saw them within, you know, within a whisker of getting to the NBA Finals. And that was without both of those players that you just mentioned. So it's going to be tremendous to see what kind of talent they put on the floor. Brad Stevens has an embarrassment of riches right now. And I don't know anybody in the East who can match up with Boston if they're healthy, especially given that, you know, this isn't just some all-star crew. They have, you know, probably the best coach in the Eastern Conference, I would say, and Brad Stevens. I've never seen anybody draw out-of-timeout plays like him. And so when you pair that with all the talent that they have, the folks in Boston have a lot to be excited for.
Josh, terrific stuff as usual. Thanks so much for the update and look forward to chatting with you next week. All right.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Once again, thanks to Josh for being on the show. Let's get you caught up with the sports from last night. In high school volleyball, Mayfield taking 3 of 4 from Murray High. Graves County swept Carlisle County in 3. Community Christian Academy swept Hickman County, Fulton County swept Lake County, Joppa Maple Grove a 3-2 winner over Fulton City, and Trigg County swept Todd Central. Girls soccer, it was Christian County a 5-1 winner over St. Mary, and boys soccer, Massac County a 4-1 winner over Mayfield, Tillman over Ballard Memorial 7-0, and Christian County down St. Mary 6-1. High school soccer tonight, it's a pair of doubleheaders, Marshall County at Murray, a boys-girls twin bill, and Callaway County at Graves County, a boys-girls twin bill. 5:30 and 7:30 are the game times. And in volleyball, Callaway County is at Fulton City tonight. Well, yesterday, Murray State held its first press conference with Racers head coach Mitch Stewart. Let's get a listen to what he had to say, and as you can hear, as long as he's been honest here, they don't know who the quarterback's going to be. Let's take a listen to the press conference. We'll start things with the introducer, and that is Parker Griffith, who is the sports information contact for football.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to our first press conference of the season. We're going to start off with our head coach, Mitch Stewart. Coach, if you'll just start off with kind of how camp went, talk a little bit about game one, and then he'll take your questions.
Camp was great, and really and truly, who cares, man? It's game week. Who cares about camp? It is what it is. We had a good 3 weeks or so of camp, and now our focus is on game week, purely on game week. And we call this we kind of go through this process in the off season with our spring. We call it our get ready phase. So we're trying to get ready for this new season, this new journey that we're going to be on with new recruits and all of those things. And then you leave your get ready phase, you go into what we call a transitional phase, where you're transitioning your team. So now you're bringing all of these new faces in. You're trying to introduce them to your new culture and things of that nature. And then you leave that and you go into now what we call the celebration phase. And that's a big deal for us because that's how we want to treat game days. Game day is a special day, especially in the sport of football, just because it's obviously it's the best sport, but it's also a weird sport in the sense that you practice more twice, three times as much as you play. You only get 11 guaranteed opportunities, and we want to make sure that all 11 of those opportunities are celebrated in the way that they need to be celebrated and are approached in the way that they need to be approached. So that's our focus right now, just going through our preparations, going through our plans for SIU. They've got a good ball club, but our preparations have been tremendous over the fall camp period and leading up into this game week. So we're really, really excited to get going.
decision made on quarterback. When you think they make that decision?
What time do we play Thursday? Six?
Six.
We'll see. We'll see about 5:59 or so. We'll make that decision. Whoever trots out on the field, that'll be our decision at quarterback.
How healthy are you entering this week?
We're pretty healthy. Our fall camp is a little unique just because we go to school. I think UT Martin, as a matter of fact, I think they started school today. And we've been in school since the 14th. So we only get about 13 days fall camp, which from a head coach's standpoint, I just be honest with you, that kind of helps me because it almost forces us to be a little bit more protective of the guys because we don't have as much time with them for them to beat on one another and those type things. But I felt really good. You know, me and Fulton talked about it coming out of our second scrimmage where at that point we had a little over 200 scrimmage plays altogether. Our injury report was front and back two pages, you know, and it was going through all of the bumps and bruises. And now as you go into game week, it's a half a page, and that's about where you want it to be. That's kind of an ideal fall camp situation. So I was really pleased with that. And I will say, too, I think that is a testament to John Michael Clay, our strength coach, and the work that he did over the summer, because we did have, you know, we had 76 players here through June and July working out, and I think that's a testament to that time that he had with them, those 7 weeks that he had to prepare with them, and the work that they put in, that the players themselves put in.
Tell us a bit about your offensive line. I noticed you have Levi Nessler, one on the depth chart, redshirt freshman here at center.
Yeah, so Austin Jones was a junior college transfer, came in mid-year, had a tremendous spring, was going to be our starter, and then we were warming up one day in the weight room. I guess maybe it was the end of spring, maybe something like that. I think it was end of spring. Just warming up, literally just stretching. And he broke a bone in his foot. It was just one of those weird deals where it was probably a hairline fracture that just kind of snapped, you know, got to the point where it snapped, which wound up being a blessing in disguise because he won't miss very much time. We were able to get him back. He's already had a couple of practices in. But it afforded Levi an opportunity to take that starting role at center. Levi did a tremendous job in doing that. You know, a lot of people saw the post where we put Levi on scholarship, and a hometown guy walked on the team. It's just, you know, you talk about a guy with gravel in his guts and those things. I mean, that guy, he's got it now. He's a tough kid. That was an easy scholarship to give, and he's a guy that made the most out of that opportunity. You know, we talk about that all the time, being ready when your opportunity presents itself, and he was. So he's going to be the starter going into game one, and then we'll just kind of play it out from there based on Austin's progression moving back and see where we're at.
Should we look for anything different as far as offensive or defensive schemes?
Not really. You know, I mean, Coach Johnson, obviously I've got a new defensive coordinator with Coach Johnson, and he'll put his twist on things, but the personnel is what we have, so we're going to try to put that personnel in the best situation as possible offensively. You know, I've kind of always been who I am and won't change that, so, you know, I don't think that there'll be a huge change in either one of those.
How comfortable do you feel at running back? I see you've got DJ Panic, Rodney Castillo. How
comfortable?
Yeah.
Really comfortable. We feel good with all three of those guys. And then, as a matter of fact, 2 days ago we moved Nolan back to that position as well, Nolan Nichols, which he's always one of your favorites there, Ed, so I figured I'd give him a shout-out for you. We moved him back to running back as well. We feel comfortable in the depth that we have right there, and we also feel comfortable in what all three of those guys bring to the table, and four now with Nolan added there, because you got DJP, who you guys know I've always been high on. He's kind of an all-around back. He does a little bit of it all. And then you've got Rodney Castile, who was a wide receiver. And then when Justin Connor had his knee injury, we moved Rodney Castile back there in the backfield. And, you know, Rodney's just he's a ball player, man. I'm pretty sure we could move him to quarterback and he'd be just fine. He'd learn it in a couple of days. He'd be just fine. But he's got some explosive ability to him. And then you got Quarterman Sloan, who's kind of a scat back. You know, he can change direction. He can cut. He can be going right and sticks toe in the ground and go left just about as fast as anybody I've seen. So you've got a cool dynamic with those three, and then everybody knows, you know, Nolan's going to be a downhill back, could possibly do some bigger set runs and some things like that, just because he's, you know, he's very rocked up, very muscled up, and goes downhill very fast.
Is there any particular thing that you believe Thursday's game will turn on?
It's always going to come down to the same five things for us. And it's the same five things that we go over after the game. It starts with turnovers. Who gets the ball turned over, which last year we did an incredible job of that defensively. What offense can hold on to the ball, no matter the weather, you know, or anything like that. It doesn't matter the weather. You've got to be able to hold on to the football and not turn it over. Who's going to be the best on third downs? What defense is going to be able to get the offense off the field on third downs? What offense is going to be able to stay on the field in third downs? Usually that progresses into the red zone. And so whatever team can put sixes on the boards and not three when they get those opportunities to be in the red zone. And then you've got the kicking game. Obviously you've always got to be solid in the kicking game. I think from 2 years ago we learned, you know, if you remember 2 years ago, they opened up the game with a kickoff return for 99 yards and a touchdown. So we have to break even, or we have to have a big play in the kicking game. And then the last of our five truths is just making the big play. You know, there's going to be plays out there that present themselves to each team, and it's going to boil down to what team made the most of those opportunities when those big plays were presented. And if we're the leader in all five of those categories, it's very hard to lose. The more of those that you split with the other team, it's going to make it tougher and tougher to win. And they've got a good football team, but so do we. And like I said, we're just excited now to hit somebody with a different color.
You talk about that excitement. Generally, in years past, there's been kind of a soft open, maybe like a dress rehearsal of sorts. How exciting, or maybe what's the mindset of a week where it's not really a dress rehearsal, it's how you...
Well, it's the same. I mean, just because, you know, I mean, even in the dress rehearsal, as you call it, you know, we were going to approach that game the same as we would SIU as well, you know, and I hate to be so cliche, but that just is how it is. I mean, that's, you know, there's always that law of competition. It doesn't matter who you play. If you go out there and you go to sleep, or you don't feel like playing, or you don't feel like going through the processes and the details that you have to do to win, you can get your fanny beaten. It doesn't matter what team you play. So we're going to approach it the same way as we always do, even if it was a different type of game. The mindset will be the same.
What's the biggest challenge that SIU presents?
Well, I think that they're a good mix of size and speed. I know that 2 years ago I went into that game thinking, you know, it's a Missouri Valley team. I thought that size-wise they were that was going to be our biggest deficiency, was just how big they were going to be. And then I remember getting to the stadium, and that really didn't, as we got into that first quarter, that really didn't take me by surprise as much as how much speed they had, just because, you know, you're playing a team that's in a league that that plays, you know, quote-unquote big boy football. They get in big sets and 21 personnels, and they play with a lot of tight ends, and it's very smash mouth up in that neck of the woods. And so I really thought that that was what we were going to see and what we had to be prepared to face. Like I said, they took the opening kickoff 99 yards for a touchdown, and they did it in a hurry. So I think that's the biggest challenge that these guys present, is they're a good mix. They've got some guys on both sides of the ball, especially up front on their D-line and offensive line, that are big. And if you're not careful, they can move you. They can create space for their skill guys. And then they've got some skill guys that are very, very talented. They've got a running back on offense that's very talented. They've got some guys in the back end defensively that are talented. They've got some good returners, kick returners and punt returners. So they're a good football team.
Losing a player like Andre Wade on D, who do you hope step up on defense for you to see?
somebody. You know, that's just the deal. Somebody's got to step up. Anytime you lose guys to graduation and those type things, it's just a great opportunity. That's what it is. It's not a challenge. It's not an issue. It's not a problem. It's not a concern. It's just a great opportunity for somebody else to step into that leading role, and somebody will do it. Man, we've had a lot of competition at those positions. Like we said before, it's been a good fall camp, and so I'm just excited to see who will emerge as that guy.
Two sophomores on defense, Don Parker, Cortez Roberts. How comfortable do you feel about those two guys going in there?
Obviously, really comfortable with Don Parker because he's got some battle scars. He's been through it. Was a tremendous player for us last year, and then Cortez, just his preparation going through the offseason, going through summer, going through fall camp, everything like that. He's been tremendous. Very confident kid. So I don't have a lot of concerns with him other than just the unknown. You know, when the lights come on, that'll be the first time that the lights have come on in a Murray State jersey for him. So, in a big role where he's going to play a lot of snaps. So that's just the only thing, is just seeing how he handles that. But if I know him like I think I do, and just the conversations I've had with him, he's a pretty confident kid. He won't have any problems.
Will we see any of that evaluation process with the redshirts?
Yeah. I tell you, that's been a unique situation just in how you handle those guys, how you approach those guys from an hourly standpoint in a week, and their weight room preparations, because usually it's pretty cut and dry. Hey, if you're a redshirt, you're going to be in the lifting groups 4 days a week, and if you were a dress squad guy, you're in there for two. And now all of a sudden you put that element of, well, this guy could play, this guy could play, so there's a lot of things that go into it. Hey, JC, this week these guys are not going to be 4 day of lift guys because we're going to travel them. We want to see them play, and I think it's great. I think it's great for college football. I'm happy that the rule got placed or put into place because I think it's good for those kids. It's good for the program, and it's also good for those guys. And Ed, you and I have had a couple of conversations about this. It's good for those guys, especially at the end of the season when you start getting banged up and guys are playing hurt, which is football. That's just a physical sports, what they're supposed to do. You have a chance to say, okay, hey, look here, give me three plays of the best you have, then I'll get you out because I got this other guy that I can roll in there, and then we can get three plays of the best you have again, so on and so forth, as opposed to just kind of taking those injured guys, throwing them out there and going, man, they're just going to play until they can't play anymore. And I think from a player safety standpoint, it's a really good rule too. So it'll be interesting to see how college football as a whole uses it, because it doesn't have to be four games in a row. It can be spread out among the season. You can play week one, three, five, seven, doesn't matter. But I think that it's a really good opportunity for some of those guys.
Coach, this morning, obviously, announced a partnership with ESPN Plus.
Yeah.
I just want to know what your thoughts were on that platform and the exposure that it brings to your team.
Well, the biggest thing that I see is just from a recruiting standpoint. I think that's a huge deal when you have parents and recruits ask you, hey, how am I going to get to see my son play? And you can tell them, say, hey, listen, our conference is partnered with ESPN. You can go to whether it's on TV this week, whether it's on the computer or whatever. Everybody knows ESPN. That's a household name. So I think it does nothing but help promote the OVC.
All right, Racers and the Salukis will kick off at 6 p.m. Thursday, a game that airs on Froggy 103.7. There at the end, you heard Mitch Stewart talking about the Ohio Valley Conference and ESPN reaching an extension of their media rights agreement. And what that means is your free ride for watching Murray State football and basketball, both men's and women's, is finished. Now, I think this will be good down the road. This will lead to, from what I've been told, about $80,000 in equipment purchases. It's going to really make the network take a huge step forward in terms of quality. Now, you may not notice it this week, but you will notice it very soon. Within 2 years, or after 2 years, you'll have your own TV and TV announcer in terms of play-by-play and color. They won't be piping the radio underneath. I know for some of you may like that, but it really isn't a great listener experience. It doesn't utilize replay. You don't get a separate pregame show that allows you to do things, or postgame. So to me, it's just much better whenever you do have those separate things. And to me, that's exciting. It'll lead to additional revenue streams for not just Murray State, but all the universities in the OVC. And it isn't really expensive. I realize it's $5 a month for something you are getting free. But remember, you're not paying simply for OVC content because there's MLB games, hundreds of them. MLB, National Hockey League, thousands of college sports events from multiple conferences, $4.99 a month. And really, there's a $49.99 per year. If you want to get the whole year, that's fine. Or you can just do $4.99 a month for the months you want it. If you're a basketball-only fan, go, I don't care about football. I just want basketball. November through March, you're done. If you just want football, say, I don't care about basketball, well, then get it for, you know, August, September, October, November, and you're done. So you're out $20. And you get to watch not just OVC games, but a multitude of other contests that are there on the ESPN Plus app. So I've already purchased mine, so I'll be being able to partake in ESPN Plus. So far, it looks like a good deal. Don't have really any issues with it because, I do believe this is a huge step forward for the Ohio Valley Conference in terms of what they will present as a quality product. Down the road, again, it could be this year for basketball, but certainly within 2 years, you'll not notice any difference in a Murray State broadcast from Murray with our own announcers versus an ESPN3 broadcast. They're going to look exactly the same. The graphics will be the same. And it'll really, I think, be good. But it will cost $5. Now, something that won't cost you this season anyway, and that's OVC soccer and volleyball. You can still watch the Racer volleyball and soccer free, but I believe by next year, those will also be under the ESPN Plus umbrella. Well, we told you that the starting quarterback has not been named for the Racers, but he has been named for Kentucky. Terry Wilson will start the opener against Central Michigan. He beat out Gunnar Hoke. Wilson, 6'3", 205 pounds, redshirted at Oregon in 2016, transferred to Garden City Community College, joined UK in January. He'll be the guy. Kentucky's depth chart also released Monday lists redshirt freshman Nasir Watkins or sophomore transfer E.J. Price as the starting left tackle in place of Blandon Young. He suffered a season-ending knee injury in Friday's practice. Remember, the Racers do play Kentucky in week three of the season on the 15th of September. Cardinals off last night. They begin a three game set against the Pirates tonight at Busch Stadium. Jack Flaherty opposing Pittsburgh's Ivan Nova. The Cardinals hold the top spot in the National League wild card race. They're 73-58, 4.5 games behind the Cubs, who picked up a half game on the Cardinals with a win over the Mets last night. Adam Wainwright and Tyler Lyons combined on a four-hitter as the Redbirds blanked the Sounds. 2-0 in AutoZone Park last night. The duo combined for 11 strikeouts. Alex Mejia and Rangel Ravelo singled in runs for Memphis. The Redbirds visit New Orleans today. All right, that'll wrap it up for a really busy Neil Bradley Show. Thanks to Josh Blanos. Ed Marlowe will be along. We'll preview the first week, the first full week of Ohio Valley Conference football, talk some high school football and more. That's coming up on tomorrow's Neil Bradley Show at 1340WNBS.com.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.